Are you a man looking for an intensive program to help you overcome your sexually addictive behaviors? Gateway to Freedom is your answer. Gateway to Freedom is a three-day intensive workshop for men seeking to overcome sexually addictive behaviors. Whether married, single, or divorced, Gateway to Freedom will help men regain hope for a new life of purity and real contentment. The workshop is conducted by experts in the field of sexual addiction recovery. Your experts have over 35 years of combined experience. Read testimonials of workshop alumni at gatewaymen.com. Get all the info and register online at gatewaymen.com or call 1-800-49-PURITY.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Daugherty, founder of the Gateway to Freedom Workshop, and I'd like to personally invite you to learn more about how you can be involved in this powerful three-day intensive. The next Gateway to Freedom Workshop is coming up February 18th through the 20th. So call us today at 1-800-49-PURITY or visit us at gatewaymen.com.
Welcome to Pure Sex Radio, training men, educating women. Are you ready to get real and start living each day in purity? This dynamic program is designed to educate, encourage, and equip listeners with the tools necessary for living a life of sexual purity. Pure Sex Radio brings you the best in mobile talk radio. Listen to real life struggles, learn how to overcome lust, pornography, and sex addiction, and get serious about purity. Your hosts for Pure Sex Radio are Jonathan Daugherty and Stephen Cervantes. Jonathan is the director of Be Broken Ministries and founder of the Gateway to Freedom Workshop for Men. Stephen is the founder of the Hope Counseling Center. Visit us online at puresexradio.com. And now, please welcome Jonathan and Stephen on Pure Sex Radio.
Good day, radio listeners. Welcome to this week's edition of the Pure Sex Radio broadcast. It's great to have you here with us. My name is Jonathan. I'm here with Stephen. How are you, Stephen?
I'm well. Thank you, Jonathan.
Good. Well, we are going to continue on where we left off last week in our discussion about the New Covenant Marriage Retreat that we have that we're launching in March. We did a pre-launch retreat back in December, and we've been kind of discussing some of the comments and stories that were going on that came out of that. All of the participants, we got permission from them to use comments and to use some of their stories. We're not connecting it to any names. And even some of the stories we can't remember them verbatim. So what we're doing is trying to take the principles that were discussed in those stories. So if you're one of the participants and you're listening to this and you go, well, that's not exactly the story, well, our memories aren't that great. So we're just trying to deliver the principles that were brought out in those stories. So let's continue on, Stephen. We'd finished last week talking about a discovery that these couples made, that they realized they had the same greatest fear. And so why don't you start us off there and kind of tell our listeners who might not have been with us last week what that was.
Right. This was the last point we were making, and that was the statement that she made. She said her biggest fear is that he'll do it again. She has not broken down. She has never done it. She can't conceive of doing it.
Meaning he'll have an affair, that he'll cheat, yes. He'll betray her again.
Yeah, so she's been faithful. She's been good, holding on to the right and true principles. And here he is on the side breaking down. And if he broke down once, surely he'll break down again. If he can't control himself once, why do we think he can do it a second time if you set him up in the same difficult scenario? So her fear is that he's going to just do it again and hurt me. And the husband said a very insightful thing, just powerful to the core. He said, my biggest fear is that I'll do it again. Mm-hmm. Because you think about what's involved in having an affair. You have to think about it and then plan it in your mind, and then you have to do step one, which involves some flirting and talking and setting this whole thing up. This was no accident. This was no simple thing. And so by the time a guy has an affair, he's looked at a lot of porn, he's been into self-stimulation, he's been into fantasies, he has an underground life, and then it finally manifests as an affair. So if you're moving down the sexual continuum and getting worse and getting sloppier and doing worse things, and then it ends in affair, isn't it a powerful insight for man to say, well, I've been getting worse for a long time, and then I did this ultimate worst thing, had an affair. I don't know. There's a whole lot of stuff inside me that could make me fall again.
And I think it was very powerful and beneficial for the wives present there to see, because all of the husbands basically were nodding in agreement. Yeah, I agree, that's a big fear. And I think what the power it had for the wife was to show her that while she may feel like they don't have anything shared in their recovery, this was a huge moment where they realized they have something shared. They have a fear that's shared. They have, and also I think it helped her to realize that, you know what, this man truly in his heart of hearts is not out to get me. He's not against me. In fact, I think it made a huge statement to the wives there that their husbands see their brokenness, they see their shame, they see their betrayal, and they also don't want to return to that. In the same way the wives do not want their husbands to return to their acts of betrayal, the husbands don't want to return to their acts of betrayal. I just thought it was a powerful moment of connection where they started realizing they started to see there are more things similar about their struggles right now than they were different.
And isn't it healthy for a man to say, I'm afraid?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the beginning of healing, I think.
Sometimes I think as men, we think our wives are going to absolutely panic and freak out if we share a fear with her. Because we're supposed to be strong,
right,
we're supposed to be the man,
it.
And all.
Yes.
And the reality is I think it brings in sort of a sigh of relief for a wife to realize, okay, my husband's not hiding behind a facade of perceived strength. He's not pretending to be something that he's not. In fact, wow, I just discovered we are afraid of the same thing. And so now we have a point at which we can communicate, at which we can talk, at which we can maybe share our feelings about what we're going to do about that fear together, rather than, hey, you go deal with your stuff, I'll go deal with my stuff, and then if we meet in the middle, great. This was a point of real connection,
right,
in terms of being
afraid,
able to see healing.
I'm afraid,
yeah.
And I'm afraid, and I'm afraid.
And, so, and one other thing I would like to say about that, there were some other shared fears that I think came up out of the weekend. Like there were some shared fears about how to rebuild trust. I think both the husbands and wives were realizing, first of all, we haven't done real well in the past in terms of establishing deep trust, and so we don't maybe know how to do that. And so both of them had a fear about, well, how do you reestablish a trust in one another? And then I also saw that there was sort of this shared fear of, will our marriage make it? You know, and not just make it, but can we even have a thriving marriage? And so I think there were a lot of points at which the couples began to realize we share more in common in some of our fears and anxieties than we may have previously thought we did.
That's good. Very good. Well, that leads well into the next comment by one of the wives. She said, I need a place to openly discuss my fears. Because you think about it, where does a wife go? To the other church ladies? To family members? To talk about her husband and what he's done? I mean, every Christmas from here on, she wants to go tell everybody in the family so that every Christmas from here on, they peer over their glasses at him and go, oh, you're the...
Yeah.
No, she's going to try and protect her husband. She can't necessarily go to everybody in the family. Maybe there's a safe family member or two. If they're healthy, the neighbors, I mean, where does she go to talk about her husband and yet protect her husband as a provider, a man, a Christian, but he's got a secret. Mm-hmm. She said, I need a place to go. And it's hard to find places to go as a female that are safe and healthy and that are growth oriented, and I can just talk about my fears.
And with that, I just have to share with our listeners about the Journey to Joy Wives Retreat. Some good friends of ours, you all that listen to this program regularly know Lee Preston. He's one of our co-hosts here, and they have a ministry. He and his wife, Lee and Shay, they have a ministry, Shadow of His Wings Ministry, and they conduct a periodic retreat that's called Journey to Joy, and it's specifically for wives who have been betrayed by their husbands through some sort of sexual sin. And so you can learn all about that. You can actually go to our website at BeBroken.com and learn all about that. But I do know they have a retreat coming up January 28th through the 30th. And so, wives, if you're listening and if you can resonate with this wife of saying, I need a place where I can go talk about my fears, Journey to Joy is the place. It's a safe place. It's a great place to go to just be able to sort of unload what you may have felt like you can't unload anywhere else, and get the validation and the listening ear and the great insight that you need to heal well.
So we're going down this list of comments made by females. And so the next comment was this: I want to tell you, my husband, that I'm hurting, but I don't want to hurt you. Isn't that an interesting statement?
It's a dilemma, isn't it?
Yeah, I have pain and grief and sadness in my being, and I need to talk about it. And I want to tell you about it, but as soon as I do, then you become broken. And then I have to stop talking, and because you're now broken, I have to take care of your brokenness. But I came to talk about my sadness and brokenness, but I don't want to hurt you because I'm trying to be nice, good, Christian, helpful. And so she said, I want to tell you I'm hurt, but I don't want to hurt you.
And I think this is a big dilemma for a lot of wives because, you know, so many wives, they truly love their husband. And I think that's why the betrayal is so devastating, because I've talked to so many wives who say they want their husbands to know them. They want to just, every big piece of news, good or bad, they want to take to them because he's the first person she thinks of when she's wanting to tell someone about anything. And here, now that this has happened, she still has that desire to want to tell him that she's hurting. But at the same token, she loves him and knows that by telling him how she's hurting, because it's based on his betrayal, that it's going to hurt him. And so it is a great dilemma that I think wives have. And I think this gets back also to a wife wanting to have a safe place where she can openly discuss
right.
some of these things. That's difficult.
So I would like to make a suggestion right here to mm-hmm. a wife. And so what you would say to your husband is this: I need to tell you about some of the pain I have, but I need you to stay in your strong place so that you don't go and start beating yourself up. Rather, you can stay out and listen to me rather than go inside into your shame and guilt and brokenness and think I'm talking to you to break you down. I need to talk for me. Mm-hmm. Can you stay in a strong place? And if you don't know what else to do, say the Lord's Prayer inside your head over and over again so you don't go into your stuff. Because if he can do something else besides go into his stuff and then start to, she can read it right away. His shoulders will slump, his tone, he'll stop looking at her and she'll stop talking. You know?
And sometimes that's real shame. Sometimes it's manipulative shame. He's trying to either push her away because that's uncomfortable for him to hear.
Right.
I would also, though, suggest to the wife that if she really needs to share some of her pain with her husband, set it up the way you said it there, but then realize it needs to be in small doses. Set it up like Stephen just said, but don't set
bring
it up
the dump
don't,
truck.
Don't set it up for a one hour dumping, you know.
Yeah.
It's like set it up, have a 8-minute conversation, and then say thank you for staying in your strong place. I just needed to get some of that off my chest, and I appreciate you for holding in because I needed to get that out.
Yes, that's good. Or even write it.
Yeah.
Because if she can think it through and write it down, she can get it outside. Then she can say, okay, I need to ask you to read this. and I'd like you to read it out loud, but I also want you to stay strong and ask God to shore you up and don't go into shame and guilt, but help me process my stuff. Because that's probably not happening in their relationship. They're probably right. not helping each other grow and deal with difficulty. They're probably stopping and cutting each other off. Well, don't think that, or that's dumb, or why are you doing that? I told you yesterday not to do it. Don't do it. You know what I mean? Right. All that kind of stuff.
And so that's why I think both the husband and wife need to agree, okay, if things are going to be new in our marriage, then we've got to do some new things.
Yes.
And they both got to agree that, because probably the reason, like what you're talking about, the cutting off, and he did that yesterday, and you know what? That's just their old patterns of communicating, or really not communicating. And so there has to be sort of a mutual agreement on the front end that says, hey, new marriage, a new covenant here, a new beginning requires doing some new things. And new things are, husband, you gotta hold strong there when your wife needs to unload. Wife,
yes.
You need to go ahead and be patient with your husband and unload in small doses. And I think those are some new agreements that they can make that are going to say this will move us forward.
And that's a good way to say it, agreements. So the final comment we have by a wife is this. Even though he has stopped performing with his bad behaviors, or even though he hasn't been acting out, or even though he isn't doing those other things for the last few weeks, few months, it doesn't mean that we have a good marriage. Just because he stopped his foolish sexual behaviors doesn't mean we have a good marriage. Right?
Yeah.
And we've heard that and talked about that theme before.
You know, if you, just because you stop something, stopping something never grows anything new. So you can, you can stop watering your plant because it's got some disease in the leaves. And okay, maybe you're no longer feeding that disease in the leaves, but you're also, the plant's going to die. You know, it's like, just because you stop doing something doesn't mean something automatically will begin to grow. Yes, you have to stop doing unhealthy, sinful behaviors, but then you must start doing healthy, godly behaviors. And this is where, you know, we've talked about it extensively on this program about detached men, and that the real issue in sexual addiction and the real issue that these marriages are dealing with is the detachment. It's the emotional and spiritual detachment that these couples have. A lot of times it stems from a man who has never known or learned how to bond. And so, yeah, he may be great now at not looking at porn, he's got all these boundaries. He's checking his lists. You know, he's doing great behaviorally in his addiction, but he's not pursuing bonding with his wife. And so there has to be this, and that's one of the things that all the couples I think agreed to was, we see now that there is a need for movement toward healthy emotional attachment. And most of the guys, like you would expect, were kind of like, I know I need to do that, but man, this is work, you know, this is real. And I don't think that was a popular message at the retreat, but it was one that every single husband knew was necessary. And that's really what I think the wives need to hear, is a husband that says, you know what, I'm going to be honest with you. This will be the most difficult thing in my life, but because I value our marriage, I will do it. And honestly, wives, you need to be willing to accept that on the front end. I know a wife wants the pie in the sky. She wants him to be able to do it because he's got this enormous, sense of love and romance just flowing and bursting from his heart, and he just wants to do it out of that. You know what? At first, he's going to have to do it just because he's got to learn an entirely new way to relate.
Mm-hmm, yes.
If you're patient with him, wives, there's this great potential that down the road, after him developing a new habit, and I know that takes all the romance out of it, but developing a new habit of connecting with you in an emotionally healthy way, that before long, this growth of romance and affection and love just starts to flow from him naturally. But it just takes time, because you got to learn something completely, completely new.
So we better move along, or we're not going to get to the men's comments. So
yeah.
The first comment And it was actually an observation, I think, or clarification for myself, because we often think that many men that sexually act out have had some trauma in the past, and we know that's true, and that's a high number of these guys. They've been abused sexually or fondled or used sexually somewhere on the journey, and that then bent them into sexuality in a different sort of way than they were supposed to go. So that's a trauma start. But the other piece that's been becoming more and more clear in my mind, and it was clarified this weekend again, was this entitlement thinking. I think it distorted sexuality can occur when some porn is dumped in your life early and you create a secret, and it's a powerful secret, and then you pair it with entitlement thinking. Well, I should have this, and why can't I have this? And everybody else has this. And
I deserve this. Yeah. That's a big
piece
of that. Yeah,
I deserve. There you go. I deserve this. All of this entitlement thinking and justification for why you can sexually go act out, and she is tired all the time, and she's not interested in sex, or I have a high sex drive, and just all this entitlement thinking. Pair that with your first little secret of porn and entitlement thinking, and you can develop an addiction.
Yeah, I do think the model is changing and has been changing over the last 5 or 10 years with the internet, with culture, with the fact that we've got a sexualized, pornified culture now, that whereas it may have been more of like an 80-20 split before in terms of the percentages of those who started with a trauma start versus entitlement, it may be closer to 60-40 now. In terms of, you know, there's still a huge number of people who their initial start towards sexually addictive behaviors. Mm.
But we're growing
trauma.
More and more
but
in
I
that
think
other
we've got
smaller
more,
group.
Yeah, I think we've got more and more people that are now just, listen, they're growing up on porn.
Right.
They're not, it doesn't have a traumatizing effect like it used to because it's just everywhere. And so now what it is, I deserve to get what I want when I want it, how I want it. And so that mentality
right.
is driving more and more people into the, and couple that with the internet where there's, you know, billions of images available, then it can really create a monster.
Good. His next comment was, on this journey to acting out sexually and having an affair, never did I wake up and think you might walk out the door. You might get mad. I might get caught. But I did as little as possible of consequence thinking. I tried to do none of that. It's not like I tried. It didn't come up. I was so caught in the fantasy, or we call it a fantasy bubble or ritual bubble. You got inside that bubble, and there was no reason and logic and consequence thinking. It was all about being inside the bubble. I never thought you'd walk out the door, and I wasn't doing this to hurt you. And I didn't expect this response from you. And then the bubble bursts and I wake up and you're packing up to leave. I never thought about that. That never woke me up on the journey.
Yeah, and that's something that I think is actually fairly common. When a guy gets so wrapped up in the fantasy thinking, it's easy to think, oh, I've got this sure thing over here, this wife. You know, we've got this pattern down. We're in our ruts. We're established as great roommates. Yeah, you know, that's kind of the thinking that a guy goes. It's a very utilitarian type connection with his wife, thinking everything's good because maybe she's not an explosive personality. Maybe she just kind of goes with the flow. Hey, maybe you're well off and she just likes the fact that she's got a big bank account and that she can draw on. And, you know, it's all other kinds of factors that can be involved in why couples get kind of comfortable in their static positions as roommates. And then the wheels come off. She discovers what's been going on, or you confess to her, somehow it comes out, and then she hits the highway. And it's sort of an unexpected, and, you know, of course that shows the delusional thinking that a man gets into, to think, yeah, I can perpetually be betraying my wife and lying to her and all this, and certainly there wouldn't be any consequences. That's fantasy thinking. That's delusional. But it's the state that most men get into when they get into their what I call high-level addiction, where, I mean, their entire focus each and every day is on how can I act out, how can I get more of what I want.
That's good. Let me. We have two left. So I'm gonna talk about this one a moment. Then I'll get to this last one we have listed. This is what a man said, which I thought was very powerful. You know, wives want to do something. They want to make him hurt. They want to reject him. They want to use their anger. They want to somehow get to him.
Control him.
Yeah, well, just a minute. That's close, but listen to this statement, because the man says, it's about the man and about him changing. He said, you cannot scare me into doing good. You can be angry. You can be threatening. You can be rejected. You won't see your kids. This marriage is over. I'm so mad. And my family is mad at you. You can throw everything you want to throw at an addict. And this man said, your fears and your threats and your anger doesn't negate, if I have a trauma, my trauma, and make me stop. I still run on my trauma. I still build a secret life. And all the noise you make over there, you can't scare me so bad that I'll be scared into being good.
And you know what I would say, though, the only thing I would say in response to that is, many wives can scare their husbands into performing well. You know, in other words, hey, listen, you wanna threaten me with not seeing the kids? You wanna threaten me by throwing this marriage away? Some guys' response will be, because their whole history has been about performance, right? They've learned how to lie. They've learned how to put a facade. I'll put up a new facade. I want to see my kids. I don't want this marriage to end. And maybe some of that is genuine, but they get back into performance mode. So the statement is true, that you can't scare me into doing good, because truly good comes from the heart. Good is about motives. Good is about purity
and
of motives.
And I think he's saying, I already have plenty of pain and shame and hurt and secrecy, and I have felt all kinds of stuff, feelings on this journey already. And so you cannot create enough distress on your part. But I think your response is right. I think a guy can say, I'll act like she wants me to act.
And what he'll eventually...
But that's because he doesn't want to lose something. Yeah, that's not because she scared him so bad. Right? You think about this. Were you ever so scared? It's like you're doing secret, stupid things and taking risks and you never scared yourself on the journey. Nothing ever was so scary that you stopped.
Well, I think fear is a good short-term motivator, but I've always believed love is the long-term motivator.
Okay.
And so fear can get you to stop things for a short period of time, but we call that white-knuckling it, right?
Right.
It's, I'm so afraid that I'll lose my marriage, I'll stop doing this. Well, what happens 30 days later when the dust is settled?
I still think you're saying, okay, I'll do it. But his point came from the deepest part of his being, I think.
Right.
You cannot put enough scare on me to make me stop. I only stop because I'm ready to stop.
Right.
Nothing externally you say or do. Now, I might act right, but it didn't mean that I changed my heart, right?
Right.
You know, so I think he's making a powerful statement from addicted man's heart. Nothing external is going to change me.
Real quickly, let's do the last point. One husband did say, you know, to his wife, he said, you know, your boundaries, those are for you. They don't actually stop me. And I thought that was a profound statement because, listen, wives want to have these boundaries that say, listen, you stay within this corral that I'm going to create because I'm so scared that I don't want you to act out again. And
I'll create the corral, the boundaries.
And it's a sense of trying to control. And this husband had great insight. He's saying, your boundaries, they may be for your own fears, but the reality is they don't stop me. Boundaries before didn't stop me. The reality is the motivation that's going to stop me is because it's got to come from within.
Yes.
It's a spiritual thing. It's a thing that I say, no, I don't want to go over there anymore. It's not because you're placing this boundary on me. And if it is because you're placing this boundary on me, guess what? My motives aren't right, and eventually I'll go back to it.
Right, and I haven't been broken.
Right.
You know, the theme of this ministry, enter into brokenness. And so your boundaries can't control me, and your scaring me can't make me stop. Only when I admit brokenness does my change occur.
Well, folks, we're glad you've been with us, and let us talk to you about our New Covenant Marriage retreat and let you know a little bit about what's going on there. We are launching this in March. March 18th through the 20th are the dates that we've got this retreat going on. If you'd like to learn more about this marriage retreat, just go to newcovenantmarriage.com. We're glad you've been with us, and we'll see you back here again next week on the Pure Sex Radio broadcast.
Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries. Visit us online at puresexradio.com.